make the argument that actually, I think we've overdone it in terms of how much we prioritize socializing.
Agreed. Yeah.
And we don't spend enough time with ourselves, getting to know ourselves. And I think that's part of the problem why people are really losing their sense of self in many ways. And that's the default network as well. It's actually really important for your sense of self. So there are these amazing studies that show that when people have seizures in parts of their default network, in relation to things like epilepsy, or if it's a stroke or some other condition, they often like self-dissociate. So they often basically lose their sense of self. And scientists are now thinking the default network actually also underpins our sense of self. And it's quite hard to generate a strong sense of self if you're constantly socializing, because socializing, as wonderful as it is, it's very performative, right? You have to think about all of the social niceties. You have to go through the social graciousness or graces. It's performative, right? And not only is it performative, it's quite tiring. Like, sometimes it's exhausting. And so it's really important to spend some time by yourself for your brain, because we know as well that when you spend time in solitude, but just time by yourself, your brain activates this process that we call autobiographical planning. And that's basically your brain's way of thinking about the future. Because the brain is in many ways just like a prediction machine. Like, it's just, in many ways, it's an organ that is just constantly scanning and trying to figure out, like, what is this person going to say at the end of this sentence? But when you spend time on your own, you're able to activate autobiographical planning in a way that you just can't when you're constantly socializing. And yeah, lots of like really intelligent people as well, like, value spending time alone. There's quite like a vast literature on this, which I explore in that chapter. But there's also like lots of interesting science that show that it has all of these cognitive benefits. And it's important to stress that it has to be a choice, obviously. So enforced solitude is obviously like appalling and really bad for you. And that's why it's appalling. That's one of the punishments that we use in the prison system, and that has nothing but bad effects on the brain if it's enforced. It has to always be a choice. It's really interesting because there are all of these, I'm just trying to remember the cognitive benefits associated with solitude. That's right, because there are basically these things that, like, Jack Fong, the solitude researcher, he coined this term, like, existentializing moments, and they're moments in time where you basically have a reckoning with yourself and you think about, who am I? What do I want to achieve in my life? Am I on the right path? And again, that's your autobiographical planning, like, piping up, basically. And you just can't have those moments when you spend too much time with other people. So yeah, I would encourage people not to shy away from solitude. It can be really quite enriching. That's the other thing I was thinking about that slipped my mind. So there's a really interesting study where it was done in a collaboration between a group of Japanese universities and UK universities. And they basically asked a large group of students to sit in a room by themselves and just think. So they weren't allowed any phones, any distractions, anything like that. And they asked them before the experiment, like, how do you think this experiment's going to go? What do you think you're going to feel about it? And obviously they all thought, this is going to be really dull. This is not going to be fun at all. But when they came out of the experiment, they all said this, essentially the same thing, was that they were amazed at how intellectually, emotionally, cognitively enriching just thinking was, like, just being allowed to just think. They'd basically forgotten, because they're in this culture of just always being on their phone, they'd forgotten what it was like to be alone with their own thoughts, to be alone with themselves, to actually get to know themselves. And so we are losing this sense of self. And it is quite worrying, because it's precisely that mindset that leaves us vulnerable to all sorts of like terrible things, like political extremism. I mean, like, yeah, tribalism, being siloed into these different ideological camps. You know, it pulls us in all of these directions. It tears us apart. And if we're allowed more time to actually just get to know ourselves, to have those self-generated inner thoughts by spending time alone, we can help bring ourselves back to a much, much healthier mental state. And so, yeah, it's one of my favorite studies, because it also leans into this really interesting phenomenon called focalism, which is where basically when you think too much about the negative, when you think too much about the negative consequences of something, when you expect something to be like these students did, like boring and dull, you focus so much on those consequences that it shapes like your reality and your perception, and you just become utterly convinced that's not something I want to do. And that's also part of the reason why so many young people are just like, I'm just going to hang out, I'm just going to spend more time on my phone then. If you draw yourself out of focalism and actually experience it, just being allowed to think, then there's that huge shock. It's like the curtain's been pulled back and it's, oh, actually, there are these really interesting species of thoughts that I didn't know were there and I can actually spend time engaging with. And my fear is that because we're not spending more time embracing solitude, getting to know ourselves, that true inner self-generated original unique thought is becoming like an endangered species. That is a worry. So yeah, I would encourage people to, yeah, if you can, go and just spend a week in a cabin in the woods, take a stack of like really enjoyable fiction with you, and just be by yourself for a bit. You'll feel much better afterwards.
Yeah, you don't have to tell me twice. Do that. I feel like maybe you're the same. I feel like I'm quite lucky in the sense that you can tell me if this is true. Aren't there like these loneliness neurons that can fire in your brain? I listened to a podcast on that last year. Apparently there's these loneliness neurons that if you're by yourself for too long, they start firing, and then you makes you have the almost urge to meet people, or makes you feel negative about yourself. Is that true?
Oh, yeah. So there are like a group of like dopaminergic neurons, which help underpin like social craving. And I think I mentioned this in the book. So when you're like deprived of social contact for too long, these dopaminergic neurons, they fire. And the really interesting thing about them is that it operates in the same way as craving for food. So they did these really interesting studies where they basically showed people images, like after spending like a really long time by themselves, they showed people images of like social interactions, people like hugging, shaking hands, hanging out. And these dopaminergic neurons basically lit up. So they were basically like they were craving for social contact. It's, as I say, like that's why it can't be enforced and it can't be for too long. Like socializing is still really important. Like your brain does basically crave social contact in the same way it craves hunger. That was the really interesting thing about that study, was that it was the same circuit, it was the same neurons that underpin hunger that actually underpin our desire for social interaction. I try and make a strong case in the solitude chapter, which I call mindful solitude, to spend time by yourself, but not at the expense, obviously, of socializing. It's still important to socialize. Your brain does still crave it. And as I said, it's really important, especially as you get older, really interestingly. So many studies have shown that as people start to experience early cognitive decline, the thing that really helps restore them and pick them up is having like people around them. That's why it's really important for like family and friends and carers to play a really active role. So it's really interesting. I think I delve into the neuroscience of like the craving dopaminergic neurons a little bit in the chapter. But yeah, no, it's really, really interesting.
It sounds, if it's the same circuit as craving for food, that sounds like it's in almost deep ancestral, almost reptilian or limbic monkey brain for social craving. So it's deep rooted, which makes sense because we are social creatures.
Yeah, but, exactly.
Yeah. But what I was going to say about the loneliest neurons is I think genetically or maybe environmentally as well, I have, mine are like quite desensitized. But I think it's like a good thing in the sense that I really do enjoy solitude, like a lot. Like I need a lot of it. And obviously I do sometimes want to socialize. And if I do, then I'll just go to the sauna or meet up with a friend and stuff. But like you were saying earlier, a lot of people lose their sense of self because they constantly need to be around people. And I think, I don't know what philosopher said it, but I think there's a famous quote around the lines of, a lot of the world's problems would be solved if men knew how to just sit in a room alone with their thoughts for a long period of time, which I agree with, to be honest. I think you really have to spend a lot of time by yourself. And like we say earlier, going out in nature, that's a form of solitude. If you go to, because I need to do this more, but I used to do it a lot when I was going through my anxious era and trying to find myself, etc. I would just go to a nature reserve with my camera and spend hours there after school. Or I'd go on walks by myself at lunch, or I'd just be sat in my room and reading and stuff. And I just think, or journaling. And I think a tip for young people who do want to feel less anxious and want to feel better about themselves is to sit alone with your thoughts, or walk alone with your thoughts. Because yeah, like you said, we are often the people we surround ourselves with, or the content we listen to. And if we don't have that default network, that space to think about, oh, how does that apply to what, how does that apply to me? Or, oh, I don't agree what he said there, but I do agree with that thing. If we don't give ourselves space to go through these, the stuff we're consuming, then we kind of just take it as dogma or as fact, which can be really detrimental to everything, to society.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people are not, we're very much losing our sense of self. I do strongly believe that we are becoming more tribal, and we're becoming like more easily swayed by cults of personality. And all of this is channeled through the medium of our phones, which we're on way too much. The cults of personality and all of these dogmas, like, they've been around for forever. The difference is that they were easier to ignore before, because we weren't always on our phones. We would spend time just sitting in the garden, staring at the woods, instead of being in the garden on like an iPad or something. And it's worth mentioning as well, like, in terms of socializing in the brain, a lot has been said about how large-brained animals tend to be really sociable, and that's true. You think about humans, but you can also think about like dolphins and elephants and chimpanzees. But the interesting thing is, like, lots of neuroscientists are thinking more and more about this now, is that also you can make the same argument for like really clever animals that actually live like quite solitary lives. So things like octopuses are like loners, but they're staggeringly intelligent. Like bears are like really clever. They have amazing memories, for instance. Tigers are another one. Things like leopards, orangutans, foxes, spiders. There are loads of animals that like embrace solitude, but are staggeringly intelligent. We shouldn't fear just spending a bit more time getting to know our own thoughts. And so I'm the same as you. Yeah, I do need quite a lot of time by myself. I'm married and we've just had a son, and we are like fairly sociable, but my wife's definitely a lot more sociable than I am. But yeah, I really value alone time. I want to do the cabin in the woods again. It's so good. I'm a big fan of like long walks now. Like at the end of the day, especially, I'll try and just have a sort of 15, 20 minute walk. I just always feel better when I come back after that. But yeah, people need time to get to know themselves. So yeah, I'm definitely, socializing is important, but don't forget about solitude. It's very important.
And I think if you do socialize too much, or if you don't give yourself enough time to be in solitude, you can really fall into these bad habits we were talking about, and other bad habits. Like, I feel like a lot of, for example, drinking excessive amounts of alcohol, that's caused by trying to fit in with the group, fit the norm, maybe even like doing drugs, smoking, being addicted to video games. A lot of that's like online talking to friends too. And I feel like for me personally, the more time I spent by myself going back into nature, the less of those things I ended up doing. So yeah, solitude is so important.